The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. If you're here in the sanctuary or if you're joining us by Zoom, we welcome you. Today we're privileged to have Reverend Terry Ofori, who is the college chaplain and the director of religious and spiritual life at Ursinus College, joining us. And she will be telling us about her experiences in Ghana during the pandemic when things started. Whoever you are, whoever you love, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, thanks for spending the next hour with us. And now Reverend Ofori will light our chalice.
In this small flame dwell, the beacon light of lanterns guiding travelers home, the warmth of hearth fires tended through the generations, the transforming energy of furnaces and the power and life of our sun. May these blessings, warmth and light and life-giving energy, be kindled in each of us.
And please say the words of response when I light the peace candle. May peace be with us. There's one more candle I'm going to light. Yesterday was the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And in the past, we've had ceremonies for that where we read all the names of those who were killed in the United States just because of the way they live. And this past year, there were 57 people killed in the U.S. So I'm going to light this candle for us to remember those transgender people. And now we will have our gathering song. If you're at home, you can sing as loud as you like, if your family doesn't mind. If you're here in the sanctuary, you sort of have to hum along behind your mask, okay?
Enter, rejoice, and come in. Enter, rejoice, and come in. Today will be a joyful day. Enter, rejoice, and come in. Open your ears to the song. Open your ears to the song. Today rejoice and come in.
we have conversation through story. And the story of Anansi, he's kind of a trickster. You may be familiar with the coyote in Native American stories. Well, Anansi is sort of like that. He's a trickster, and unfortunately, he always learns things the hard way. So in this video, you'll see a little bit about the country of Ghana in the beginning. That's where the Anansi stories originated, but now they're folk tales through all of Africa. And this one is about Anansi tries to steal all the wisdom in the world, after which we'll have a musical meditation.
Once known as the Gold Coast, the country of Ghana sits on the western edge of Africa, along the Gulf of Guinea. Ideally situated for trade, Ghana has an abundance of natural resources, a rich history of folktales, and some incredible wildlife. Located in south-central Ghana is the Ashanti region, an area home to the Ashanti people. Once a vast empire, Ashanti culture reflects their natural environment, bright colors and stories about how the world was created. The stories were passed to each generation and spread across the Atlantic through the oral tradition. The stories of Anansi, the wise and lovable trickster, is about an Ashanti folk hero who often takes the form of a spider.
Hey, this is Nick Cannon, and I'll be reading Anansi Tries to Steal All the Wisdom of the World. Anansi, which means spider in the African language of Akan, prided himself on being clever, but knew that he was not very wise. So one day he came up with the clever idea to become wise easily. He picked up a hollow gourd and thought to himself, "If I fill this gourd with wisdom, then I can keep it all to myself, and I'll be wiser than anyone in the world." Excited about his new scheme, he went from door to door asking for advice and wisdom. He thought he was being clever by stealing everyone's wisdom, but everyone he met happily shared their advice with him, for they could see that Anansi needed wisdom more than anybody. Finally, when he had filled his gourd with all the advice, ideas, and wisdom he could carry, he scuttled back to his home excitedly. But then he had a thought. What if someone else comes and tries to steal all my wisdom? He decided that he would hide his wisdom in a safe place. So he saw a tall tree and figured that it would be a good hiding spot. He clutched the gourd close to his body with two of his legs and tried to use the other six to climb the tree. But the gourd was too big. Every time he went to try to climb the tree, the gourd got in his way. Just as he was growing frustrated, his young son came by and said, "Why don't you just tie the gourd to your back, Daddy?" His son's wise words made Anansi realize that wisdom was best used if shared with others. So he tied the gourd to his back, climbed up to the very top of the tree, and held the gourd up to the sky. All of the wisdom in the gourd spilled out into the wind and flew away far and wide. And that is how wisdom came to the land. The end.
Now we'll have musical meditation with the song Woyaya. And we're going to see the video, I believe. And the group that performs it, or the woman who sings it, is Wiyala. And the group that wrote it and came up with the song in the first place is Osibisa, which has three members from Ghana, as well as a few others from other countries in Africa. It's a little long, just to warn you. I'm sorry, it's about 5 minutes, so relax. It's meditation.
We are going, heaven knows where we are going. we know we will get there.
Back to reality. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Reverend Ofori. She's very humble. She didn't want me to read her list of accomplishments because it's quite lengthy. A few things that I'll note, though, she went to Harvard Divinity School, which I always thought was a UU Divinity School. And She is involved, she and her husband are involved with a group called Pan-African Youth Leadership Academy, which she will talk about in her sermon today. So without any further ado, I will turn it over to Reverend Afuri.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Akwaba, which means welcome. You are welcome. That's actually what it means. It means you are welcome. So when you are in Ghana, every space that you go in, someone says, you are welcome. And at first I kept saying, for what? Because, you know, we say you're welcome when someone thanks us. But that's how they greet you. You are welcome here. And so today I'd like to speak with you about homecoming. But if you notice in the song, they said, heaven knows that you will get there. Indicating that we kind of don't know where we're going, but we'll get there. And so my homecoming is really about the fact that home is wherever we are. And I feel like a lot of our lives are focused on how we will get to someplace instead of just being present and trusting that heaven knows where we're going. And so I do think, particularly in America, we're very concerned about where we're going and about time. And you'll notice in African countries and some Eastern countries that time is pretty cyclical, but it's also something that you don't try to control. You kind of know that you'll get there at some point. And you really do. Because you just never know. Someone may invite you someplace, or when someone comes to visit you, there's no set time for anything. And I think African Americans in this country can kind of relate. It might be built into our little worldview, cosmology. But, you know, everything is ish, 2:30-ish. There's no exact time, because one of the things that people listen to the roosters for the time telling. You don't see a lot of clocks everywhere. The sundial is pretty still prevalent in some of the villages. So there's no exact time for something. But not only that, part of heaven knowing, or the cosmology that the spirits in the world will kind of determine when you get somewhere, they really believe that. And so I've been in situations where people will come to some place what I would think would be extremely late as an American. And they'll say, well, you know, such and such came by and I saw this person on the road and I had to say hello to them. There's no telling people that you have to be somewhere at a certain time when someone sees you. And so I actually have benefited from that mindset, because as a chaplain at Ursinus, I'm there to be a pastoral guide and also provide a non-anxious presence in a place where sometimes people are pretty anxious. And one of the things that I cannot do when people come up to me and tell me their stories, which they do, and my colleagues always say, we're going to get a shirt for you that says, don't talk to me. Because I have to go to meetings and I have to teach classes, of course. And people always seem to want to talk to me. And maybe because I look at them, because sometimes we don't. And when I ask people how they're doing, I really mean it. And they know that, and so they want to tell me. And sometimes I want to tell them, oh, don't tell me anything about your problem right now because I have a meeting. And I've learned to just kind of be a little bit fluid with that, because people need the space to be. And sometimes between 1:20 and 1:30, or even 1:25, somebody might need to be in that moment, and they might need to have someone who can listen. Now, all of us can't work that way, because, you know, in this context, we have to be on time. And so I do, you know, I've learned, particularly following the pandemic, that people have been really hurting. And people want to tell me about it. So how do I manage being on time for things and listening to people's pain or being present with them even for a joy that they haven't been able to express? And so I began to try to figure out, how do I manage these two worlds of this spiritual being time, which doesn't necessarily coincide with chronological time? And I think all of us are sort of on that journey between the spirit world and this present world, and how do we manage all of that? And so I got to thinking about a book that I had read, and I'm going to be reading portions of it as I'm speaking. It's a book called The Crystal Stair. It's about womanist spirituality by Diana L. Hayes, who actually is an African-American womanist theologian who is Catholic. But she goes on this exploration of trying to figure out her place as a woman and a Black woman in these predominantly white male spaces, dealing with theology and also having a cosmology that is quite African and otherworldly. So how do we live in these spaces? And I think everyone has that. So she talks about it as a deep river. And I know a number of us know that song, Deep River. I can't say that I know all the words of it, but it's a Negro spiritual. And you find in a lot of the African-American spirituals, they were trying to answer those questions with Deep River and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. You know, they're in this suffering, they're in this world, but yet they're singing and they're trying to transcend their situation. They know there's some place that they're going to go. They don't quite know when that will be. Even naturally, some of these songs were about going north. You know, they were clouded in spirituals, but they were thinking about, how do we get out of this situation now, and then where are we going to be going later? So they're always moving back and forth between the spiritual world and the natural world. And singing does a really good job of bridging that gap, but as does poetry. So I'm going to read a poem from Langston Hughes and then talk about the river of life. So I got to thinking, rivers kind of represent movement, and rivers are always trying. They always come up. They're always coming between the rocks and the trees, and they're always moving toward the sea at some point. And sometimes they look still. Rivers just kind of have a wonderful metaphor for life, in my opinion. So this is the poem from Langston Hughes. I've known rivers ancient as the world, and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans. And I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. That was a poem first published in Spiritual Life, a journal actually, but it's written by Langston Hughes. The River of Life. This poem has always, in some mysterious way, haunted me. Why? I'm not at all sure. Perhaps it's because I've always seen life as a river flowing ceaselessly, seeking its end, which paradoxically is also its beginning. We're all connected, and time is connected. Or perhaps it's because I see my own life as a river flowing from and through my parents, grandparents, and beyond, with tributary influences from loving friends, mentors, and guides. We are rivers, singly and together. Together, a river of peoples, a river of nations within a nation in these United States of America, and even more so within the church. We are a river flowing to the sea from whence we once came, the sea of endless wonder, that sea of creative force from which we came into being and toward which we spend our lives seeking to return. Vincent Harding speaks of Black history in the United States as a river, but also realizes that analogy has a broader application, for as he says, the river is in us, created by us, flowing out of us, surrounding us, recreating us and this entire nation. We are the river. And at the same time, the river is more than us. Generations more, millions more. In our flow through life, the span allotted each of us, whether long or short, is a journey, a river's journey toward the sea, toward the source of our being. A river has many tributaries, many branches, but only one source and only one goal. A river flows sometimes placidly, sometimes tumultuously, gaining force here, losing it there, but steadily seeking its end. Just as the river, our own lives ebb and flow, gathering force for a while, lying placidly at other times, while we perhaps regain our strength or refine ourselves and reframe our stories. But always there is a current that flows through us, that guides us, that keeps us on course, even when we seek to change course. All of us are rivers. But eventually, we all come together to form a mighty stream of humanity flowing toward oneness in God. The eternal answer, as Carl Reiner notes, to which all men and women, sisters and brothers, and their finite existence are the constant, persistent question. As people, as persons, defined and undefinable, we are constantly called and guided, often when we least expect it or realize it. Howard Thurman, one of the earliest and least known Black theologians in this country, notes that a river may twist and turn, fall back on itself and start again, stumble over an infinite series of hindering rocks, be dammed up temporarily or thrown off course by cataclysmic upheavals, yet at last must answer the call of the sea. It is a restless journey till it finds its rest in the sea. As with rivers, so with life, for both the source and goal are the same. We are mighty rivers. And I began to reflect on the river while I was in Ghana, and what my purpose was there, because I had planned on going for a 2-week mission. We were doing some low income housing in the area, and I thought it was going to be for 2 weeks. So I packed for a 2-week journey that turned into a 16-month journey due to the pandemic. And initially, as all of us were, we were very caught off guard. And I wondered and complained, like I have to put that in there, what in the world is going on? And then I began to look around me, and I noticed that Many of the people there were not all that concerned. About getting to somewhere, but how they were going to be present in the pandemic. And so I began to think about, what does it mean to be present in this pandemic? Not trying to get out of it, not thinking about the old normal or what we were going to do in the future, but how are we going to be present in this pandemic? And I wonder if that lesson was a little bit easier for people who had less control over their resources. So one of the things I noted is that people actually did respond to it. They created masks. They also created something called Veronica buckets, which I would love to see everywhere. And so these buckets were, a woman named Veronica came up with the idea, obviously. And they were manual water buckets. They were like trash cans, and someone put a hole through it, and there was a little stick with a wheel that you would put your foot on, and running water would come out. Now, prior to that pandemic, a lot of people had not thought about running water because some of the villages, people would go to wells. And not every place. Of course, you know, it's night and day from some of the villages and the cities, just like we have wonderful cities here, and then we have some not so great areas of cities. And so sometimes people have a monolithic interpretation of Africa, but some of it's way more modern than it is here. And then there's some parts that are, you know, you feel like you're transported back into, say, I don't know, the 17th century, depending on where you find yourself. And I found myself in a lot of those places, which was interesting, because during the pandemic, people were asked to go back to their homes and their villages. And I said to my husband, when we were it felt like we were sort of in that Bible story where they had to go back to Bethlehem and all this stuff, and people were told to go back to their villages and stay contained there. This is in the very early stages. And I said, well, what if someone doesn't have a home? And my husband said, everybody has a home. And I thought to myself, well, no. I said, you know, we have homeless people. And his thought was, well, people might be homeless for a time. He said, but everyone has a home because everyone has come from somewhere, which is a good point. And so often when we would travel on the road through this whole time of shifting and people going back, and I would see people on the road that looked like they might be having a difficult time, my husband would say, why don't you go back home? And I used to get really upset with him and say, you know, what if these people, he says, no, there's a reason that maybe they left their home. So let's find out, and then let's figure out a way to help them to reconcile with the people that they left. So the notion of home isn't your own individual home, but that you were born in a village and that these people have to accept you in. And so I went with my husband to his village, and I wasn't born there, but as far as they were concerned, I was back at home. And so everyone had to go back home, which was just so interesting. And I thought, wow, interesting. He was like, even if they haven't seen you for years, if they've never seen you, if you have some connection to this place, which is why the greeting in Ghana is a Kwaba, you are always welcome. So everyone has a home. I love that. And so we went back there. And this place was a little less modern, you know, not with water constantly running and electricity constantly going. People used a lot of solar power. And so when it came night, people went to sleep. And I remember one of my little nieces saying to me, which was so interesting, but I got the message. She said, well, when we're tired here, we just go to sleep. And I was thinking to myself, okay. But she noted that I was always trying to find ways to get electricity to do work in the United States. And I guess she noted that I was tired, and she was just trying to figure out, why are you trying to do all this stuff at night? And I thought, She also said, but I forgave her for this one, when we're not hungry, we just don't eat. Now, isn't that something? I said, well, I'll think about that one for another day. But it's interesting that I looked like, I guess I was in constant motion and constantly, where people had a time when they stopped doing things, you know, they ceased. And they let sort of, if it was dark outside, it was dark. It was no time to be trying to do anything else. And, you know, how blessed we are with this constant electricity and constant water. If the water goes out, which it did at certain times, you just planned everything ahead of time. I thought that was quite interesting. And I felt like I was not in control of my own time. And are we ever really? Because I think the pandemic let us know that we're really not in as much control as we think that we are. And so again, I kept saying, okay, what is the purpose of this pandemic? And so instead of looking away, I started looking around and even looking up like, oh God, when you're gonna get me? I started looking around to what was around me that was speaking to me. And one of the things was the children. The schools were out and everything is pretty much outside. Even churches, but schools are inside, which is interesting because those schools were usually built by colonists. And so they had an idea of school that you were in the school building and you were, so school had to be out because it was inside. And so we decided, well, why don't we join them outside? And it was just so refreshing to just be with these young people. They also started a choir, which was lovely, and they had along with these schools are mission churches, like the Methodist Church and I don't think I've seen a Unitarian church there. The Presbyterians, but they're all sort of by themselves now. The Presbyterian Church is not connected to the Presbyterian Church in the U.S., but these were all mission centers that built schools with churches. So you had the Anglican Church. And one thing that happened outside of the mission churches and schools was the fact that these people finally got to be amongst their tribal village association. So they kind of left that association of the school and the churches they went to. And so we had this, we started saying, what do you want to do? And they said, we want to sing our songs, because they were singing hymns, believe it or not, some of these very European hymns. Very interesting, the whole colonial situation. I won't go into that. But the conditioning there for people when they go to school is to become European or something else, truthfully speaking. And so they wanted to be themselves and sing their own songs with their friends, who some went to the Methodist school, some went to the Presbyterian. So it became an ecumenical choir, and they wanted to sing these songs with their own beat. And it was wonderful. I actually have tapes of that, but I didn't bring it. And so they had just a wonderful concert, and it spoke volumes to the ministers in that town who were still kind of going by their little church denominational thing. And so we ended up having an ecumenical ministers meeting based on the children coming together as one, which was really nice. So that was one thing that I said, hey, this is a purpose. The other was, the notion of weaving is very, as you see, the Anansi, the spider, is a very beloved tale, and the notion of weaving, and people weave cloth all the time. And so I realized that I had clothes for 10 days. Remember, I was there for 16 months. And so they said, we'll just make you some clothes, and that's what they did. So one of the things I'm wearing today was made, and when I say make, I mean make. I have some other clothing that I didn't wear, but they literally make the thread from the animals with a very old method of weaving, using wooden sticks and a wooden, sort of like with a wooden wheel, which I know nothing of. And so with the most beautiful of colors. And so they started making clothing, which I actually really love. That was more. And then also the jewelry that I'm wearing today was also made, handmade from one of the young women in the village, and they would go pick up the stones. And so it turns into quite a wonderful affair because I have quite a few items. So then I started thinking, okay, there's a reason for this. And so I decided that I would help some of these young women and that they would, and I would start selling some for them. Which I'm in the process of setting that up here. But I decided I would call it my treasure because I was putting the thought of what I thought I treasured. I realized I didn't really need all those things I had at home.
And boy, did I have a lot of things at home. Because I like nice stuff. You know, clothing anyway. And we just sitting with them, and they would say, well, what would you want? And then they would come up with these beautiful colors just based on their idea of what they thought my energy or my personality would be, which I thought was really great. So everything was kind of custom made. And that was just a gift. So the other purpose of the pandemic for me was embracing change as we embrace the seasons. So much change, but so much good change came out of that. And then releasing the old to receive the new. So I didn't have anything after my 2 weeks, you know, was up. But because I was empty, I was able to receive something new, far better than I ever thought. And then home is wherever you are. And so one of the things that happens in Ghana, when people say you're welcome, they pull up a stool. And the stools represent the ancestors. Like each stool has a personality and a name to it, which is kind of, we don't get the concept of it. That's like, let's just sit down. But when you're sitting, you are being present with the ancestors. And so people say, they say, Kwaba, you're welcome. And they pull up a stool and then you sit on it. And then they'll proceed to tell you what this stool represents. And so if we know anything about the chiefs and the kings there, they all have a stool that they represent or an ancestors or a story. So people use the stool and then they use the, then you have to tell them your story, which I love. And so when you come in and they say, Akwaba, you're welcome, they pull up the stool, they tell you what this represents. Now this actually goes on. This is why people are late to things. I figured it out. And so I'm thinking to, you know, I said to my husband one day, well, they already know I just came here to see them. But you, they say you can never assume that you know what people's stories are. And it could be different. So when you come there, you have to tell them what your story is and why you're coming, even if you saw them yesterday. So that was a little much. But then I started thinking, wow, I've always considered myself to be a narrative theologian, and what wonderful lesson that is to welcome a narrative from someone and say, why did you come here today? Sometimes we take that for granted. Like every day is a gift. Why did you come today? And sometimes it's not a good reason why you came, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But the point is that it's making space for you to be present with the people that are there, the people that have come before you, and then you add your story into the mix. What a lovely gift that was to me to be able to have a story, and it could be something different every day. And I had to think about, why am I in this space today? And so for me, my time there was so actually eye-opening and illuminating, and people would feel me feeling so bad for me. You know, I'd have relatives or colleagues, and they said, oh, I can't believe you're still stuck there. And I kept thinking, I'm actually not stuck. I'm actually very present in this moment and actually feeling revived and renewed. Besides, it was very warm. There was I was near the sea. You know, and I would think, well, what's happening in America now? Okay, people are, yeah. I think I'm doing okay. And so I started changing my narrative too. And people would say, why are you here? And I started really thinking about the spiritual reason. Like maybe it was meant for me to connect in this time. So why am I here? And what am I supposed to be doing while I'm here? Not just for myself, but for other people. And that's when I started thinking about, hey, these people are making these beautiful garments. You know, they have such massive need, and they have such a gratitude in this season of gratitude. You know, they might have one dress or one pair of shoes or even a book. And I remember when I came back, and all I heard from people was constant complaining about everything, even with my students, about the books that they had to buy. And I was thinking, the fact that you can actually buy a book is a gift. And so for me now, everything has been reframed to the gift of even the pandemic. the gift for people to even see that they can create running water resources for themselves, and the ingenuity that had to come out of that for some people, even the gift of having to go home and recognizing that you came from someplace. So you, yes, you do have a home, whether you like those people or not, but I'm saying that's another story for another day, but everybody had a home because we all come from somewhere and we are going somewhere, but heaven knows how we're going to get there. So I thought that was really wonderful because I wasn't able to learn about the song. But I was thinking, wow, isn't this interesting that that song was what I was thinking about? And isn't it interesting how it kind of all syncs up like a river? And so I guess my message for us today is, you know, heaven knows where we're going, when and where. And I feel like we should loosen up a lot more. Really, I think if nothing else, I think we're not in control of the world, but we can contribute to the world, and we can make it better wherever we are. And we all come from someplace. We really do. Whether we like the place or not, but we do come from someplace. So that should give us a grounding. And that's where people, you know, when I was thinking that people were going to be like so upset that they had to go back to their villages and, you know, just the American notion of telling people being told what to do. And everyone was so excited, like, wow, we get to go back to where we came from. It's all in how we think about it. And this is a season of gratitude. I really hope that we can live into this season of gratitude and be present. I mean, for goodness sake, we complain about having to prepare for Thanksgiving when there's so many people who don't even have food to prepare. I mean, we have so many things. When I came home, I thought this is utterly ridiculous to the point that it's sinful. That I had so many things and I was able to survive for 16 months with what I thought was a bare packing because I was so upset. I thought, all those things I was going to pack? And I remember my cousin taking me to the airport and he said, cuz, please leave one of these suitcases. He said, you're not going there for a month. You're just going for 2 weeks. And I was thinking about him every, I'm going to tell him. And I left the suitcase and I thought, and I complained about that for 3 months. And then looky here, people came up to me and said, we can make you something that was far better than anything I had at home. So I thought, you know, I hope we get the message of this pandemic because I'm not sure we're getting it so much here. And people are fighting more than ever about should we wear a mask. And people there were so happy to wear a mask. And so currently my husband is in Ghana right now. Actually, we came home and he turned around and went back 3 months after we came back. And I was, you know, not up for another adventure just that quickly. But he's retired. And so I was teaching remotely while I was there. But he went back to help with the vaccination efforts. And he gets quite upset that all he hears about people here arguing about when people want to have access to the vaccine and they don't have it. And so they depend on other countries to give them their surplus. And so they're trying to do this because for them, it's about community, even the mask wearing. You know, they decided, hey, we'll just make beautiful masks and we'll give them out to people because we want to do this as a community. And I thought, oh, if only we could, you know, learn something from that. And so I feel like I was really transformed. And so the pandemic for me was a time of enlightenment. And I hope that it can really be for us in this country as a whole, and that we would give up our sense of control of time, of everything. And I mean, I know we have to be on time, but to really just embrace the purpose. So again, these are my three takeaways. The purpose of the pandemic, embrace change as we embrace the seasons. I am also an academic advisor as well as a professor at Ursinus, and this was registration week, and I had to register a student, and she told me that she wanted to take all the same classes that she took this semester for the spring. She was very serious about this. And I had to explain to her, no, dear, if you wish to progress in the program, in the curriculum, you have to take new courses. I said, and these courses are not being offered in the spring. Now, that sounds really funny, but that's how some of us act. I said, if you wish to graduate, you have to take different courses. She says, well, I don't like change. And she had a serious problem. I mean, this is serious for this young lady, to the point that I don't know if she's going to be able to matriculate. But I said, and I was sitting there, and I said, you know what? Some of us are actually acting that way. We may not say it, but she says, I don't like change, and I'm not taking any new classes in the spring. Well, good for you, darling, because, you know, just good for you. But that's how we act, you know? She didn't like change. And I said, you know, if you don't like change and the winter comes, you're going to continue wearing what you wear, and you might not feel so lovely. And then if you wear your winter coat in the spring, that might not feel so good either. So I think you have to start learning to adapt to change. I don't know if she got it, but it looks like she's going to go for next semester. So I think we're going to be okay. The other lesson, release the old to receive the new. If your hands are so full of things and stuff, how can you get anything new? And home is wherever you are. So I think we should just embrace being in this present. We're home right now. Home is within us, like Dorothy. Remember when she was always trying to get back home? And whoever that guy was, the wizard, or he wasn't the wizard or whatever, you know. I remember him telling her, actually, Dorothy, all you have to do is click your heels 3 times. But she didn't really go anywhere. She was already home. The Tin Man already had everything he needed, the lion, and we all have, and that's what I say to myself every day. You know, Terry, you have everything you need. And I really do. So I'm just so grateful to be home, here at my home. And I'm so grateful to be present with all of you. Thank you so much for having me. And this is home to me. Whenever I come here, I feel welcome. So Akwaba to you, you are welcome to me. And I hope that I'll always be welcome here. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to play this song. It's called God is Good. Yes. And when I came back, I found everybody complaining about everything. And I said, you know, this is one of my favorite. He's a young artist. And he just talks about goodness and that God is good, or the earth, or however you see it, but that it's good, really, even in the bad times. And so now this is the closing song that we sing at our chapel services, and the students have adapted to it, and we all sing it together, and we hope, we just to reframe our minds that everything's going to be okay. And so this is the song that we sing every week.
May your struggle keep you near the cross, and may your troubles show that you need God, and may your battles in the way they should, and may your bad days prove that God is good, and may your whole life prove that God is good. See, may your struggles keep you near the cross, and may your troubles and me.
let your whole life prove that God is good.
I'd like to thank Reverend O'Shory. It was a very good, interesting talk, and your words are inspirational. And I hope everyone checks out.
Thank you all so
fire.
Much.
It's beautiful.
For coming out.
Now we'll have Matters of the Heart. John will introduce them.
Okay, everybody, we are going to start. This is the time of our service where we call Matters of the Heart, where you have the opportunity to share a joy that is lifting you up or a sorrow that is dragging you down with our community. We'll have a brief musical interlude followed by an opportunity for people to share. If you're in the sanctuary, you may come up one at a time up to the front of the sanctuary to the microphone and share either your joy or your sorrow at that time. And then once everyone in the sanctuary has had an opportunity, we will provide additional instructions on how to raise your hand for those people who are on Zoom as well. Now we'll have a brief musical interlude. This is Hold My Hope, presented by Christine Perry and accompanied by Isaac Strader.
Our closing words today come from Andrew Pakula. Let there be light, the light of joy, the light of happiness, and the light of contentment. May it illuminate our paths and fill our lives with peace. And let there be dark, for it is from our dark places that we are brought forward, tried and tested, and impelled toward growth. It is in these places that we realize compassion and learn to love. And there was day and there was night, and there was joy and there was sorrow, and it was good. And now I will extinguish the chalice, but not its light, that we will take out into the world with us as we flow on the streams of our lives. We will have our closing song, and then please, if you want to socialize, we should do that outside. And those people on Zoom can stay and talk with one another. After the closing song, Mike will be giving the announcements.